Cheryl's got much better music, I must say. Welcome back. This is Robert Jennings subbing in for Michelle McLaughlin of the Austin Gardener. She needed to take the day off today. You heard the numbers, 512-836-0590 or toll free 877-590-5525. Somebody texted earlier about putting grill ash into whether or not it's safe for the compost. Yes and no. Yes, if you didn't use fuels. So if you didn't use fuels, it's a wonderful source for your compost. And also, it doesn't have any nitrogen in it, so it's really safe to put anywhere. It won't burn anything. And it's also got potassium in there. It's got lime, phosphorus. So definitely safe to put into your compost pile. A good addition with all the additional trace elements that it has as well. I see we have a couple of callers in. Let's go to Ray in North Austin. Yes, sir. How can I help you?
Yes. Good morning, Robert. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I was wanting to know, I had a couple aloe plants that were outside during the freeze, and of course they froze, and I was wondering if they'll come back. And I also had some ferns that I put in the garage, and the leaves have turned kind of real dark. And then my last question is about, I got a new dog, and I'm trying to figure out something to put in my backyard because he runs a lot, something that would stand up better than St. Augustine grass.
Zusha grass, perhaps, but as far as the dog specifically and whether the urine will stain that grass noticeably or not, I don't know the answer to that, but that could be a good option for you there. But,
okay,
Zosia? Yes, Zosia grass.
Okay.
But I'm not, unfortunately, yet even a neophyte in grasses, although I'm learning as fast as I can one subject at a time. But,
okay.
But also, think about whatever grass, find out if you're going to have. Some grasses are better as far as the urine stains from dogs, so keep that in mind, okay?
Okay.
All right. Anything else there? Oh, and your aloe should be just fine. It'll come back, and I know everything's a mess. Was it, you know, the bigger the bucket, the better. But I know the succulents are a mess, but I think it will be okay. Okay.
Okay. Now, what about the ferns? The leaves?
Oh, the ferns.
Real dark.
A lot of the foxtails and horsetails and various ferns are going to have some ugly looking damage. And those can be cut back. When you said it was dark, are you talking black or brown or gray or white or what?
It's almost black or real dark green. I think they're Boston ferns.
Boston ferns, okay. Is the entire thing that way?
Well, one of them is the entire thing's that way. The other one, about half of it.
Okay. Let us sit for a bit and see what new greenery comes from what spots. The one that is completely black, after waiting just a little bit, cut it back to the base. The other one, hopefully you have some new shoots coming up. And if so, then you can, you know, cut the damaged part off and then you almost have a normal looking plant and then eventually it'll catch up. But the ferns definitely took a hit, but it's awfully hard to kill ferns, people.
Yeah, okay.
Some you can.
I appreciate your help.
You bet, sir. All right.
Thank you.
Good day. Let's go to HB. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. I got a question. It's probably not the most normal one you get, but I've got a property out in Burnett we're moving out to, and we're putting in about a 300-tree fruit orchard, multiple different types, all within the range for the cold freeze hours. And we're putting in 5 to 7 foot bare root. Already got 87 of them put in. My question to you is, we've got fabulous soil. When we auger down, we can go 2 feet down and have nothing but beautiful black loam.
Wow.
Or some of it's black sandy loam. And what kind of ground cover would you put in around the trees? Or allow to grow up around it, or just simply let the native grasses grow?
All sorts of different fruit trees, did you say?
I'm sorry, say that again.
What kind of trees?
Well, we're putting in apples, pears, plums,
yes.
Tangelos, tangerines, blueberry, in on these. We're going to get these acidic at. We're kind of shotgunning to see what works best out there, but it's not the typical of yellow caliche that you find out here at all. Like I said, you can go down 2 feet and it's black, sandy loam soil.
And are you wanting...
We're right at the headwaters of the South San Gabriel.
Are you wanting just purely a ground cover, or are you wanting to beautify it as well? I mean, like American Beauty Berry, are you just wanting a flat, like a milepoium, a white flowering milepoium to keep weeds from popping up, or?
Yeah, I mean, we've tilled the field, and it's gorgeous as far as the dirt is concerned, but it's all raw dirt right now. Would we just, I mean, since you're out in the country, needless to say, the native grasses are going to come back. Would you just allow that to occur and then mow it down, or is there anything in particular you
don't want
to?
You don't want the grasses growing up into the tree because it's robbing the nutrients of, you know, and all the micronutrients, everything that the tree needs to produce tasty fruit and the like. You don't want the grass growing up to it. I am not a tree expert, but I do know that you typically do not want grasses growing up the tree itself, and I would encourage you to call one of the local nurseries and ask for their tree expert, because I do not want to mislead you as far as whether or not it's even appropriate to put a ground cover there. From what I understand,
it's a 6 to 7 acre field, so no, I'm not going to go plant something, but as far as throwing seeds out, it's another story.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know whether it would be something that, just once again, and if keeping it away from the tree, what would you keep it, 2 feet away, 3 feet away, or what?
From the entire canopy, really. Really, from the drip line. But I encourage you, please, do talk to a tree specialist, because I'm not one. But generally, you don't want grass growing up to tree trunks.
All right.
Okay?
Thanks a lot. You take care.
HB. Bye. If someone knows the answer to that, by all means, do call. I don't seek or ask for help often enough, and I do have people that help me out. With a little note, I appreciate the one about the verbenium the other day, because I couldn't spell it. That really came in handy. Want to talk, you know, cheer y'all up a little bit here. First off, I'm going to have to torture y'all with, not right now, but when we come back, I'm going to have to tell you the bad joke of the day. All right? We'll be back after these messages. Welcome back. This is Robert Jennings, subbing in for Cheryl McLaughlin of the Austin Gardener. I warned you earlier about the bad joke of the day. Well, here it is. A man walks into a bar and says, "Ouch." Let that one sit on the noodle for a little bit. I want to tell you about something that might actually be funny. And don't worry about the joke. I'm not here all weekend, folks. I'm not here all weekend. I do want to tell you something that is absolutely hilarious. I have a good friend who works at one of the box stores. I always go everywhere when I look around. And however, I do most of my major purchases at the local nurseries. But he's a gentle little soul, looks like Santa Claus, actually, and sells bonsai trees on the side. And he's telling me a story about these bees that were... They had some poppies, and one year, about 3 years ago, and all the bees, there was a buzzing around the poppies, and they would kind of just kind of go on the ground a little bit and roll around a bit and start gathering a crowd of people, kept looking at all these bees that are bubbling around the ground next to these poppies. And after they buzz around on the ground for a little bit, they fly back up, and they go right back to the poppy. I thought that was just absolutely hilarious. It doesn't kill them. It just puts them to sleep. And then they wake back up. Anyhow, we have to have a little humor here, people. I know it's been brutal out there. I know people are going through a lot. Speaking of, I do want to mention, don't know if this could come into play for anyone, but apparently the FEMA is paying for hotels. If you know anyone without heat or water, call 1-800-745-0243, okay? On my show, I do have a little various segments, and one of the quick segments is just the flower of the week, and I encourage you to look at Joseph Coat Tree. It's the most fascinating rose you will ever see, zones 5 through 9. And I, by the way, I do everything that I'm talking about on this show, and someone else mentioned about the pruning knife, the brand name, and I texted him the like. Everything that I talk about on my shows or this show is on a convenient Facebook site. It's RJ space Garden space Designs, plural, if you want to see any of this information. There's also some very valuable information as far as PDFs as to the minimum degree for various species. There's also a list of, for your new designs for planting more winter hardy, a dieback brush and the like to come back. The best thing to use in that. And however, going back to this flower of the week, this Joseph Coat Tree, it is just, it's unbelievable. I've never seen so many flowers in such a concentrated area, except for clematis. But it has, it's a climbing rose. It has clusters 4 inches across, all the way across. They change, which is what I love about this, like Althea, Rose of Sharon, how they change from blue to red as they age during the day. But they change from yellow to scarlet, and then back to orange and carmine. They're moderately fragrant, and they're very, they bloom profusely from late spring to fall. And again, this is the Joseph Coat Rose. It is zones 5 through 9. It, however, doesn't like wet roots, kind of like clematis. So it'd be beautiful to put these two species together. I'll back on that. Clematis just doesn't like, it likes its roots cool, which is typically wet. So that is just the opposite. I got sidetracked there. But anyhow, check it out. It is just a wonderful, wonderful looking rose. And believe me, I see a lot of stuff, and it definitely caught my eye. Joseph Coat Rose. And one other one, the Peggy Martin rose. It's a climbing vine rose, has very few little thorns. What's amazing about it, it's called the Katrina rose because they found 11 or 20 inches of seawater and still made it through that hurricane, the Peggy Martin climbing rose. Wanted to tell you here, take opportunity also to tell you about Cheryl's company. Her landscape company. She's been doing this for decades here, and that's the Kevin Wood Landscapes with an S. Very versatile what they do. They specialize in native design, adaptive plants, but not just the plants, but also any wood deck or cement work, water features. They do it all. I do see we have some calls in here. Let me get on to Forrest in Oak Hill. How could I help you there, sir?
Yeah, Robert, just wanted to chip in on that for that guy who's going to plant a bunch of fruit trees.
The mulch. Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, that, he may be, you've certainly heard that you don't plant the grasses up to the tree.
Yes.
Because they do compete with the for the nutrients.
Yes.
Against the tree. So, he should mulch out as far as he can go under the tree in order to get all the benefits that mulching gives him.
Oh, that is what I should have told him, Forrest, and thank you. He was looking for a ground cover, and the ground cover was not in the form of a plant. It is in mulch, and yes, that's typically what they put underneath there, and I just wasn't sharp enough to point that out because I got focused on trying to find a plant.
Well, I'll pass on some other information.
Yes.
There is a guy that has planted many fruit trees and such in the Kyle area, and his name is Cliff Kasky.
Cliff Kasky?
And that's K-A-S-K-E-Y.
Yes.
Cliff Kasky.
And what does he do, sir?
Well, he's planted, he's run large orchards and sells fruit at the farmers markets down south of Austin. But he's also a consultant and might give a lot of good information to this fellow if he were to Google Cliff Kasky.
Well, yes, HD, I hope you heard that. Again, Cliff Caskey. And Forrest, I do appreciate you helping me out there.
And the little additional information is you wouldn't want to put more than 4 inches of mulch down at a time, because you get higher than 4 inches and it soaks up the light rains.
And that's something.
And the water doesn't get through them.
You're exactly right. And that's something I said on one of my first shows, that people should not be putting too mulch. And they also need to think about what type of watering system that they have, whether it's under the mulch or over the mulch, and whether how much is the plant or the tree is really getting water. But that is exactly correct. A lot of times people, all they're doing is just watering the mulch, and they may be breaking down the mulch quicker, but the soil and the plants aren't getting the real benefit. So that is definitely true. 4 inches is too much.
And one last thing is that the mulch around the tree and keeping the grass from growing under the trees, breaks the life cycle of the plum curculio. If you keep a mulch under there and don't allow weeds and other growth under the tree, it breaks the life cycle of curculio for some reason.
I'm not familiar with that, but as far as putting the mulch out, the mulch should be to the drip line, shouldn't it? Or not necessarily all the way to that.
As far as he can go out to that, so, you know, some people run out of mulch and can only do a certain distance. But sure, it would help all the way out to the drip line for sure. But that's usually a lot of mulch. But Cliff Caskey, one of the things he did was he'd talk to the tree companies and have them drop off the loads of wood chips. Now, I don't know if he composted them a little further or went ahead and put them straight on. But that's how he got enough mulch to handle under his hundreds of trees.
And a very good, cheap reuse of existing materials, no doubt.
Yes.
Well, that's very good advice, Forrest. I definitely appreciate you calling in there.
Well, happy to. Keep up the good work, Robert.
Thank you, sir. Bye now.
Bye.
Let's go to Joanne in North Austin, how can I help you?
Good morning, Robert.
Good morning.
I have a question. I'm using this to redesign part of my garden, and I have verbena and ajuga now, and it's just sprawled all over, and I want to instead put pathways and rounding bushes.
Welcome back. This is Robert Jennings subbing in with Cheryl McLaughlin for the Austin Gardner. Let's get back to Joanne. Joanne, and regarding your plant and shrub, let's just start over there. You were wanting to put in a new
I'm going to put in a new section of garden and tear up my ajuga and verbena because it just went wild and yucky and it's woody and it looks horrible.
Yes.
So what I want I'm envisioning instead is perhaps a couple of rounding shrubs. And put a pathway in instead of having everything sprawled all over this section of garden. So I'm looking for something that would tolerate shade because it's going to be under a pecan tree, but perhaps would give me some color, maybe 3 to 4 foot high at the most, and I would need 4 of them.
Well, I was about to say Japanese yew, but they can get up to about 6 feet tall.
Yeah, that's too tall.
And as far as just having a little bit of beauty in berries, American Beauty Berry, perhaps?
Okay.
Those get up to 3-4 feet. They don't get much taller than that. But very
that would
beautiful.
Be
I mean, just beautiful, beautiful purple berries that come out in a time when not everything has a lot of color. It comes out in something like, October, November. But that would be very nice there. A couple other things you might put in there is perhaps a look up Mexican bird of paradise tree. It's a yellow flowering tree, understory tree, but it has beautiful red hairs that come out of the yellow flowers. The yellow flowers are the shape of sienna or casa popcorn tree, and is really neat to look at.
Okay, so is that different from the regular bird of paradise plant?
Yes, I mean there's for every plant there's a shrub and there's a flower and there's a tree and there's a vine and this is a Mexican bird of paradise tree. You know a Palo Verde tree, you know the one with the green bark and it has the little yellow flowers. Well, this is similar shape and airy and grows in shade or not, is completely drought resistant. I mean you see it, the highway system plants it underneath the bridges and the like, but it has a beautiful flower structure along with its ficus. Like leaves, but there's these beautiful red hairs that come out of it. Much more striking. It looks extremely tropical and a very cool plant. I can't think of the scientific name, but it's called the Mexican Bird of Paradise, and you know you're looking at the right thing. A tree, I need to add that word, Mexican Bird of Paradise tree.
Okay.
And you will know you're looking at the right one when you see these 5 or 6 long 6-inch red hairs coming out of these yellow flowers. Okay?
All right. Would the dewberry and the bird of paradise be good to companion plant?
Yes, as far as adding some color. Otherwise, just maybe some boxwood shrubs as far as keeping things for a little bit of privacy, and it would stay at that 3-foot height or a dwarf real pond. No, that's going to be too tall. Dwarf Nadinia, the red dwarf Nadinia. That's about the only time I would ever say that because the other ones are pretty invasive, but the dwarf variety and it's red give you some extra color there. Okay?
Okay. That sounds good because I've got a garden behind it, so I don't want to, a vegetable garden behind it, so I don't want them to go too big
block
to shade
view.
Out
yes.
The garden. So that's why I was thinking 2 to 4 feet.
I got you. Coral berry, perhaps. Coral berry bush, up to 3 feet.
Okay.
And a desert broom with a beautiful yellow flowering. It gets about 3 to 4 feet and give you some color there. And it smells wonderful.
And I'm sorry, we have a
desert,
really bad connection.
Desert broom.
Broom,
like you sweep.
Okay.
And it smells wonderful. And yellow flowers.
The only other question I have is my what if. I have some feather grass.
Yes.
Just wait and see if it'll pop back.
On everything, wait. Yes, on everything, wait and hope. But a lot of things, some disagree, but I think a lot of things are going to come back. A lot of the natives are going to come back a lot more than people think.
I'm just sad because my Easter lilies were up. So
I know we're going to lose fruits for the year and the like.
They'll survive.
But that's the main thing. As long as we see some green growth, we have next year. We'll always have next year.
Okay. Thank you so much, Robert. Take care.
Bye now. Let's go to Patrick in Hyde Park. Yes, Patrick, how can I help you today, sir?
Yes, sir. I have several mature, probably 3 to 4 year old bougainvilleas.
Yes.
That were in large pots.
Yes.
And I cut them back and I covered them up.
Yes.
They don't look too bad. Is it a good time to put fish fertilizer on them?
Yes, they're going to start coloring up real soon, by the way. In late winter, they start doing their first cycle of colors. Be sure to look up putting micronutrients. Look into special fertilizers for that. Bougainvilleas are very picky. And also, as you may or may not know, once they bloom and you need new color, you have to cut it back. You have to cut it back about 1/4 in order to get new color to go on. Also, they love to be shocked. If it just will not color, I mean, just literally spearing the roots. It thinks it's, dying, going into shock, and the first thing it wants to do is color up. They love sun, okay? They do love sun. And typically, I do cut mine back twice, so once when I put them in the greenhouse just to make room, and then there at the beginning of the spring to give them a start and make sure that I have some color. So you've already done that, and you're ahead of the curve. And I would, besides that fish emulsion, I would encourage you to look up micronutrients, some of the micronutrients beyond just the phosphorus and potash and nitrogen, okay?
Okay, well, thank you so much.
You bet, sir. Bye. All right, folks, I'm going to come up in a break here in a couple of minutes. I wanted to just talk about the dieback brushes, one of my favorite things. These are some of the things that give you the most tropical-looking native designs or things that will come back that are winter hardy. And some of the things that don't die all the way back are going to die all the way back this year. That doesn't mean they're dead. Please do not give up on these things. Again, some protect in some protected areas. For example, you may have an Esperanza that never died back, but particularly they do up until they get to a certain size, and then they really don't die back. However, if it never did and it has this year because of the cold, give it a chance. Most likely it'll make it. The same thing has been going on with a lot of species, folks. Barbados, you know, I expect, you know, even I think the Dorantas will make it. The lion's tail will make it. And I'll be going over some other species like that in the next segment. But I do want to emphasize this dieback brush. Other examples of this are your firebush, your fire spike, your jatropha tree, one of the best, coolest looking red flowering trees that gets up to about 7 feet tall, dies back each year all the way to the ground, just little sticks that you pull away easily, just like a Texas star hibiscus, you know, that wonderful native flower that we have here with the huge 6-inch red stars. Well, those basically, after it freezes, you can just easily break those off, but yet they come back year after year. I see we're coming up on the last break of the show. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back to the Austin Gardener. This is Robert Jennings subbing in for Cheryl McLaughlin. Glad to be here helping out folks. Again, my show is Garden Designs with Robert Jennings. I start off the week each week at 8 a.m. And wanted to follow up with something last week that I wasn't clear about in talking about whether to paint or not paint wounds on trees. And, of course, with live oaks, you always need to paint those ends as soon as you can after you cut each one, and also to spray your saw with Lysol both sides in between each cut that you do. I was confused as what to do with some of these gigantic scars of where a huge branch fell down and pulled a large section of tree trunk off, and whether or not to paint all of that area, and that I was thinking to leave alone. But with it warming up, Jeff Ayer says that even that should be painted up. So keep that in mind. Just didn't know how unsightly that could be. You know, this is a time to readdress people. This is a time, if you did lose a lot and you're going to redo things this time around, remember what didn't work. What part of the yard that all of a sudden had less light. And that what you had there is not working anymore, and so those types of species don't work well. But that also allows you to go, well, now that this is a shade place, this is a good place to have shade-loving flowers or whatever, American Beauty Berries or, you know, what have you, to get some color there. And also, besides correcting mistakes in your yard, of wanting to beautify a part of the yard that you've never done before, while you're doing the rest of this, then you can add these highlights. And I wanted to give you a list of things that I think are... I lived in Lubbock for many years and gardened there, and I lived in Dallas. So I've lived in colder climates and here as well. And I cheat as much as I can with tropicals, and I get away with a lot. I probably lost a lot, but I have cuttings of everything, and I plan for things, and I place things in areas that can survive where you normally don't think so. However, I wanted to read off, and again, this is if you need the list, as long as the minimum temperature degrees for various plants, the PDF of that, it's on my Facebook. Just go to RJ space garden space designs and you can see this stuff. But I want to read to you during this last segment plants for you to consider that are more winter hardy or that is dieback brush that comes back. And that are quite beautiful. And a lot of these are the natives. And again, the natives can handle the most. I've already mentioned a few of these, you know, like lion's tail and Duranta. They're good down to about 20 degrees. And whether or not, you know, that 5 and 10 killed them permanently, I don't know. But I would never give up on the lion's tail. The Duranta maybe not have made it. A lot of the sages people are going to make it. You know, just wait a while, let things dry out a bit, and then clear it up. You know, after you see new growth going on, trying to figure out whether or not you have to replace the entire thing or not, but most likely a lot of those beautiful sages that we have are going to be okay. Some of the salvias will as well. You're not going to agree with some of the things that I say here, but various layers of protection that I was telling you about provide more survival rates, so keep that in mind on some of these on the heart. Purple and maybe green hearts, of course, are going to make it. Purple hearts, you cannot kill it. That thing will grow out of asphalt. Ajuga, clematis, amaryllis, some of the columbines, the Bilgeria Newtons, the miniature version of the Queen's Tear Bromeliad, the Spanish broom, okay? Honeysuckles, they're still, the Mexican honeysuckles are still going to have their seeds. The elephant ears right now look like cooked spinach, and you're going, oh, no way, it's going to survive. They will. They have a very good chance of those things making it. So just cut off the ugly, mushy base and wait for the new growths to come. Now, hibiscus, you know, there's tropical hibiscus, there's single-blossom hibiscus, there's double-blossom hibiscus, there's Texas stars, there's Confederate roses and rock roses, there are hibiscus mallows, and the like. And hibiscus mallows provide you with some of the most beautiful flowers you can imagine for a long time. They're about 10 inches in circles. They almost look like a Texas star, except they're round. Okay, these are called hibiscus mallows. They grow everywhere, all the way up to Wisconsin, and they come in red, in crimson, in burgundy, in white, in pink, and they now have swirls as well. Let me break from this list here that I hopefully will be able to finish to give people ideas, such as, you know, pineapple guava and Rose of Sharon and all this that comes back, butterfly vines and chocolate vines. But let's get to Tom. Tom in Lago Vista, how can I help you, sir?
Yeah, hi, Robert. I've got three very tall palm trees. I don't know what the botanical name is for them, but they've got to be 50 feet tall. Are they going to be okay?
It's debatable. It's debatable. I would have to look at the kill temperature for that, but preparations did you do to at least get a good watering in? Did you put any additional mulch or bags of dirt or try to protect the base of the trunk? Any?
They got a good watering, but other than that, because of the height, I wasn't able to do any protection.
Yeah, but I just meant as far as protecting the roots is what I was going at. Yeah, obviously the height, you can't cover it. But what does it look like right now? Do you still have a center core that's pointing up? Are every single one of the leaves completely brown and hanging down? Is there any green in any of the leaves?
The center core is still pointing up.
What color is it?
Yeah, but I don't know. Beyond that, the rest of the stuff is brown.
Is the core, is that centerpiece standing up? Is what color green is it, or is it green?
It's got some shade of green, but because it's so tall, I can't really...
Yes. See it up close.
Exactly determine.
You know... I don't have a good answer for you, sir. I wish I could tell you it's going to make it, but that people are going to take major hits with their palms. You know, the Mexican palms and the like, and the sago, even the sago palms, which are pretty resistant. That 50 foot tall. I mean, gosh, it was up there in that brutal cold. You're just going to have to wait. You're going to have to wait.
Right.
I pray that you get a new shoot of green growth, and if so, it made it. And watch that centerpiece like a hawk that you can. Maybe get binoculars out and see if you see any change of greenery for the better in it. Not a darkening, but a brightening, you know. And literally, if you have a cheap pair of binoculars, try to look at it. But otherwise, for your other trees out there, you may have to rely on a tree specialist on whether or not to tell you it made it, but there's going to be a lot of heartbreak on the palm trees, unfortunately, sir.
Well, the good news, Robert, is we're within 100 yards of the lake, and the lake itself had a moderating effect.
That's true, and very good point. Just saw this, you know, Lago Vista. You know, sir, that's a very good point, because It's a very good point. Because I say that in regards to, like, my koi pond, I have romansias, which aren't going to make it most likely, and flowering Chinese maple trees, you know, and the like. But that added warmth from the water in the soil allowed a lot of things that normally wouldn't make it through winters here, make it. And so with you being right there by the lake, that might have been a mitigating factor. It's just you, I pray that you get a new... I pray that you get a new green shoot there, but I can't tell you if it survived or not. I'm sorry.
Right. But the sagos are going to be okay?
A lot of sagos are going to be lost, and people are going to have to... There's going to be a lot of ugly damage to them, and they'll have to cut it out. I encourage you to leave some of the loan, whatever little bit of green that, that are in those, let it soak up that chlorophyll and get it down internally into the plant. But a lot of sagos are going to be lost. I'm going to see a lot of white, totally brown sagos in my neighborhood in Cedar Park. Down there lower near the lake, you're going to be a little bit better off, okay?
Right.
All right. So, well, I hear the hard break coming up here in a little bit. Wish you a definitive answer, Tom. Otherwise, good luck to you.
Well,
oh, yes?
Yeah, thank you, Robert.
You bet, sir. Bye now.
Bye.
All right, folks, you hear the music, and it's my time to go. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend, and I'll start us off again next week at 8 with Garden Designs with Robert Jennings. Take care now.